To discuss this issue in further depth, we're now joined live over the phone from Japan by the editor of an independent news outlet, The Corbett Report, James Corbett. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, James. I'm a big fan of your website. I'm a big fan of the stuff that you put out. And I'd really like to know, what is your take on this proposal to amend the Constitution?
Well, it's obviously hugely unpopular here, and we see that reflected in the protests and demonstrations that are taking place right now in Japan, a country that doesn't have a lot of such large demonstrations. So that gives you a sense that there's something quite large happening here. And I think that's really a fundamental change in the fabric of Japanese society that these bills are proposing. And on paper, it perhaps doesn't look like such a drastic shift. It's just a series of security bills that would enable the idea of collective self-defense instead of straightforward self-defense. So now the Japanese, if these security bills pass, it means that the Japanese military will be able to be deployed offensively anywhere in the world to protect its allies. So, for example, if the United States were under attack, Japan could mobilize its forces for that. Again, that doesn't seem like such a radical idea, but for a country that's had pacifism hardwired into its constitution for 60 years now, that's a pretty drastic shift and one that a lot of people aren't taking lightly.
Absolutely. It seems as if this is the start of something new here. Now, you mentioned something interesting. You're talking about the collective self-defense. Is this just a lot of mumbo-jumbo? Is this another attempt from the U.S. to try to find another proxy to be able to fight wars across the world through someone else?
I think this has to be seen in light of the rising tensions in the Asia-Pacific generally, and of course those tensions were ratcheted up several degrees back 5 or 6 years ago when then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced the Asia-Pacific pivot, and the United States was going to be spending more time and more of its military resources in the Asia-Pacific region. I think that was just a signal that obviously Japan was going to be the number one ally for the U.S. in the region to implement that increasingly militaristic agenda. So I think the Abe government is really responding to that to a large extent and pushing forward some strains that have been seen as sort of far-right movements here for a very long time to try to increase militarism. I think those are coming more center stage as the tensions in Asia-Pacific ratchet up generally.
Interesting. And as far as I understand it, Japan is somewhat of a counterlever or a countermeasure against China in the region.
Well, China certainly is growing in military and naval power and is starting to assert itself more obviously so in places like the Spratly Islands and others, where China is really making some bold moves and some claims to patches of territory that they haven't done so in the past. And so, of course, China and Japan have their own territorial squabble over some islands in the East China Sea that have flared up a few times in recent years, and that's increased tensions. And I think both China and Japan, that the leadership of China and Japan see something beneficial in that, insofar as it does rally the populations around the flag and get them to support these agendas, which I think are taking place for a lot of reasons, not just political reasons, but I think, of course, there's also the military-industrial reasons for these types of tensions. Certainly, there are a lot of companies that are making a lot of money from this increasing militarism and the increasingly and the rising defense budgets that are a result of that, with the Asia-Pacific region seeing one of the largest rises of any region in terms of military budgets over the last several years.
Interesting. Well, following that train of thought, then, is this one of the many little steps towards a much larger war?
It certainly appears to be that way. That is the trend. And I don't know if that war even necessarily has to take place, but certainly the tensions are rising. And I think there will be more diplomatic incidents, certainly, and potentially, yes, military incidents as a result of this. And I think it's pretty inevitable when you see both Japan and China, as well as other regional players, like the Philippines, for example, starting to become more militarily assertive in the region. It certainly means that there's a lot of people vying for a small patch of earth and water, and that's going to lead to some military confrontation at some point if things continue trending this way, yes.
Sure. I'd like to go back to this bill and the controversy surrounding it, and I believe that it passed the lower house in the Japanese parliament back in July. Now, I understand it from an American point of view in the sense that if America is able to, I don't know, rope the Japanese into fighting or becoming their next proxy, it makes sense. American troops wouldn't have to go into an area, or there'd be plausible deniability or any number of other reasons. But from the Japanese point of view, you know, where's the win in this deal? Where's the win in changing the constitution? How is Japan better off for this?
Well, I think the first thing to note is that officially it's not really an amendment to the Constitution. The Article 9 clause in the 1947 post-war Constitution that prohibits offensive military action won't itself be changed. It's just the interpretation of that article is going to change to allow not just self-defense, but this collective self-defense idea. So it's not even as radical as changing the Constitution itself, just the change in the interpretation. But even so, as I say, it is a pretty big shift. And I think there's a lot of different factors that play into this, but I think that one that is always used here in Japan to get some of the sort of domestic support for this agenda is the fear of China, the fear of North Korea, the fear of Japan losing its global competitive edge economically, which obviously has happened over the past couple of decades, and sort of this general xenophobia that can be played on amongst the Japanese public. So rather than a win in a straightforward sense, I think it's played off as an attempt to stop the further losses, I suppose, or an attempt to stop the sort of ambiguous other. And I think that's really the only card they have to play in this hand, because as you say, there's nothing really to be gained from Japan's perspective for committing its forces to help, for example, American forces around the world. There's not a real economic or geopolitical win for Japan in that, other than, of course, being a sort of favored nation for America, which comes with certain fringe benefits in terms of economic benefits and others, but still, those are perhaps not such a great deal as they used to be. So, again, I don't think there's a lot for the Japanese government to play off, and I think that's reflected in the fact that now the Abe government, which has been quite popular here for the past couple of years, it has lost a lot of its popularity. In fact, there's now a majority that disfavors the government rather than favors the government, and over half of the people in polls are against the security bill specifically.
Interesting. You mentioned something interesting there. You mentioned that instead of amending the Constitution or changing in some way, it would just be a change of interpretation. I'd really like to dig a little bit deeper into that, because it seems to me as if this is just a Jedi mind trick. This isn't the Constitution you're looking for. This isn't the interpretation you're looking for. And with that in mind, I mean, Japan, as like you said, they have a 60, 70 some years of pacifism. Don't the politicians represent the people there? I mean, if the people don't want it, how are the politicians going to vote for this?
Well, I think in the same way that politicians everywhere around the world tend to use whatever tricks they have in order to get the population to go along with it. And if the population doesn't go along with it, I think they'll just continue to ram it through. I think this might be, in effect, a sort of political suicide for Abe. I think he really could lose his prime minister status over this if it gets passed and is hugely unpopular. But Japanese prime ministerships are come and go quite quickly, usually. It's very seldom that you'll have a prime minister last more than 1 or 2 years. So I think Abe's already coming to the end of his political expediency. And so I think he's willing to sacrifice the prime ministership over this. But yes, I mean, it is hugely unpopular, and there's a lot of people who are mobilizing against this right now. So I think that basically there's a lot of politicians who are just going to stake their sort of claim on this. And unfortunately, the Japanese system being what it is right now, it's highly unlikely that the ruling party, the Liberal Democrat Party, will actually lose an election over this. They've only been out of power twice in the entire history of post-war Japan, so I think they're pretty assured that they're going to continue to reign over the Japanese parliament. It's just a question of who's going to be in the prime minister seat. And as I say, I think Abe is quite willing to give up that seat at this point, as long as he gets this legislation through.
Interesting. Do you feel that getting this legislation through, it could be somehow, and is becoming even more unpopular than he already is, could somehow be connected to maybe another quantitative easing? As far as I understand, this was somewhat controversial inside of Japan as well, Abe's monetary policy.
Abe was essentially elected on his monetary policy, or at least his promise to restore some sort of economic momentum here in Japan, and he ultimately completely failed to deliver in that, I think, as people can see from Japan's abysmal GDP growth over the last few years. The Abenomics that was being touted at the time as the savior of the Japanese economy has been anything but that. And really, at this point, the Bank of Japan is just painted into a corner where there's really nothing else to do but ease, because, of course, with the Chinese yuan devaluation, basically there's nothing else for the Bank of Japan to do other than to try to print yen and keep the currency down. So I think that they've been painted into a corner. I think the lies that Abenomics was somehow going to turn the economy around have been exposed. So what was his main political asset a couple of years ago when he came into power, basically his monetary policy, his talk of turning the economy around, has been exposed as a great weakness. I think that is contributing to his decline in popularity, but I think it's quite clear that right now the touchstone flashpoint issue is this: are these security bills that they're ramrodding through the parliament right now.
I see. I'd like to go back to something you mentioned previously when you talked about a collective self-defense, and this would the reinterpretation of the Constitution would allow Japan to not only have defensive military capabilities, but now offensive. Is there, obviously it's a little bit early, but is there any indication that Japan is getting ready to open up a military base inside of America then?
Well, I haven't heard of any such plan, but really no one really knows exactly how this new interpretation is going to be applied in reality. That's going to be another thing. I think what people are really afraid of is that this is the slippery slope. Once you start reinterpreting Article 9 of the Constitution, it's not that far to actually amend it or even abolish it. And I think that's what people are really afraid of. So I think really it's just a question of pushing that line a bit further and a bit further. In fact, there was a big debate here over a decade ago with the Iraq War and the U.S. invasion of Iraq. There was a big debate over whether the Japanese self-defense force should be over there providing logistic support and non-battlefield support, which they ultimately did do. And that was quite a big controversy at the time, because a lot of people thought that was really a breach of Article 9 of the Constitution. So this process of pushing back the sort of meaning of self-defense and trying to amend it has been going on for some time now. I think this is just the sort of boldest step yet, and people realize that once this reinterpretation takes place, I don't think there's much that's really stopping it from being a sort of political momentum to continue changing that interpretation to suit whatever the current ruling power wants it to be.
Interesting. In essence, it's a slow erosion of the interpretation, or even a death by a thousand paper cuts. What are the chances that any of the legislators or even Prime Minister Abe could eventually reject this idea after the latest protest? Is there any chance that he could just say, hey, you know, this is actually kind of a bad idea and walk away from the bill?
It's certainly possible, but it's unlikely, I would say. I think that the only thing that we could imagine at really stopping it at this point is if somehow the legislators in the upper house were motivated by these protests to vote against it. If the bill stopped in parliament like that, I think that would basically be a sign that Abe would at that point probably resign as prime minister. And that would probably be a pretty resounding defeat, although it doesn't seem like that's realistic at this point. It seems like this is going to be railroaded through the upper house the same way it was railroaded through the lower house. But as you say, there's going to be deliberation on it in the coming weeks, and they're expected certainly to wrap it up before September 27th, which is when the Diet will adjourn for the next recess.
All right. Well, on that note, I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us. It was a pleasure having you here. I look forward to having you back on the show at a later date and time.